Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome back to another episode of PWT.
Invited you like I usually do.
Hey, well, I screwed up and forgot to unmute us when we started this show about, 10 minutes ago. So we've already talked about the main event and all of that stuff. Hey, I apologize for that. I screwed up. So with that said, I'm going to go over to area code 410 because that's the point where in the show here is going to the phone line. So I know that as I was saying before I went over to the phone lines and realized I forgot to unmute myself, I recognize this number. I know this number, and I can't put a name to the number at the moment. So let us know who you are and what you thought of the show. Well, clearly the caller segment of the show here tonight is not going very well. So let's just move on here. So we also had some other things happen here on the show tonight. You know what? Why don't we just do it? Let's talk about the great debate because we have to. So we had Schism versus, Schism and Chase U in a debate here tonight in it looked like Chase University's, probably Chase University's like gymnasium or something like that, where the two teams basically kind of were asked questions by a moderator and went back and forth, you know, as you do during a debate. This was kind of an interesting segment. I did not think I was going to enjoy it coming into it, and coming out of it, I don't know. I kind of chuckled a few times. I didn't hate it. I wouldn't say I loved it, but I definitely didn't hate it. I thought Thea Hale in this segment was absolutely hilarious. When it came time for her to speak, Ava, I forget the question that they asked her off the top of my head.
Something about security.
Yeah, something about – because they basically were all talking about, like, inclusivity and security in their current factions, you know, Chase University, Schism, and things like that. So I forget exactly what they asked Thea Hale, but she all of a sudden comes out with this beautiful, eloquent answer, and she's talking a mile a minute. And then
I didn't even try to recap it.
Oh my God. Like it was great. And then she sits down next to Chase and, Chase is like, hey, what the hell was that? She's like, I don't know. I blacked out. I actually got an audible chuckle out of me and that's hard to do. So that was cool. But yeah, I thought this segment was interesting. I feel like it kind of highlighted a lot of the strengths of, everybody on the mic, even Ava for that matter. Obviously this is a pre-recorded segment, so she, you know, probably had as many takes as she needed to get things right. But, I feel like this was a win for her as well. She didn't feel as, green on the mic. I mean, as she is, she's still very new to the business. Yeah, I feel like this was kind of a little bit of a win for everybody here. Duke Hudson, obviously, making some kind of snide comments about Chase University as well. But Bruce, let's go over to you and find out what you thought of the segment.
So interesting. Different. I'll give them that much. They tried something different here. So I think the funniest thing to me was how they had each, I guess, school, for lack of a better term, with their own kind of student section. And then you look, and in the Schism section, you just see a couple of them with the creepy smiles on their faces when they took off their masks, and they just held it throughout the whole time. In Chase U, of course, you have everybody to Chase U here. So the studying what they did here, it only makes sense because of Chase U. If it wasn't for Chase U, then having this sort of segment a complete waste of time. Now, I think what they did here was show each person's strengths and how they come across in the promos. Hale has all that energy, and then when she can control the energy, it's even better. Hudson has layers to his character that came out a lot during the segment. Chase is the ultimate motivator. Gacy is the enigmatic, full of himself leader. Ava is sort of his counterpart, but she's better at short spurts. And then you have Fowler and Reed, who give more of the eloquent speeches. And, well, I guess not so much Reed this time. But they're more there to be the – which is weird to say, considering where James Drake was before this and never giving any promos, just pantomiming along with Zach Gibson. But they're the ones who are relied on for sort of the deeper messages that Schism gives when they have their promos. Now, not sure if the end game we all saw was that Chase U is going to be put up for, I guess, ownership or the what's the presidency of Gacy or Chase. It's kind of weird that Hudson as a wrestler can just do that. One thing I noticed throughout the whole night was Shawn Michaels is not necessary because wrestlers are just looking at their own shit throughout the whole night. So why is he even there? But we all saw the mixed tag coming. I don't know if we saw necessarily Tyler Bate being the one to be inserted into this, but I guess they found a way to make it seem reasonable why he would have been involved with them in the first place by helping Thea Hill with some yoga, and then now wanting to get involved and help them out. If you don't have anything else for Tyler Bate, at least just keeping him on TV and getting him some time to and promo, even though I'm not sure about this character. The match is probably just going to be one of those chaotic 8-person matches where things are going to break down eventually. Everyone has to finish on each other. And I'm assuming here that the heels do win. And Hudson is the reason why he, basically goes over and joins Schism. But if they go the opposite way, they could have this be the ultimate come to Andre Chase moment for Duke Hudson. He reinvigorates himself and his commitment to Chase U. So there are two distinct ways they could go here. Again, give them props for trying something different. I think this is going to be one of those segments where you either hate it or you either like it. I don't know if there's anybody who's going to be in between aside from either you and me, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious to see what happens with or how this match plays out because like you just laid out with Hudson potentially being the reason that they lose and then joining Schism. I could also see a third option too. And then obviously you had your second option of Hudson having his come to Jesus moment and all that. But I also see a third option, and that's just Duke Hudson causing Chase U to lose, and then just kind of walking out on both factions and not joining either. I can almost see Duke Hudson kind of reverting back to, I wouldn't say reverting back to his character from before, but he almost feels like he's, I'm going to say more intelligent, for lack of a better word right now. And he's kind of like above both factions, right? He's always kind of he always makes a little bit more sense than Chase. He's always kind of like, why are we celebrating one win and stuff like that? Even though he's a bit of a heel here in some cases, he's kind of a voice of reason too, which is something that I always really do like in a heel. So I'm kind of wondering if that might be it too, and we may end up seeing. See Duke Hudson kind of break away from Chase University after this, and then kind of go back to singles action and do his own thing. But it's a guess, but it's something I could also kind of see happening.
Sure.
Yeah. All right. Let's actually go back to the phone lines now. We actually have a couple people in queue here now. So first up, we do have our man Darrell here. Darrell, can you hear us? Because our last caller couldn't.
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
We can. Beautiful. There you are.
Okay, so NXT.
Yes.
I'm checking out, trying to see how everything go. Being that I will be at that show at 10 o'clock in the morning in L.A.,
Oof, yeah, that is an early start. Actually, it's even earlier for Bruce.
It starts at 7 o'clock.
I know. As it was coming out of my mouth, I was like, yep, 7 a.m. for Bruce.
And that's a long day for me because I'll be going to WrestleMania day one.
Yeah.
Though, and so that'll be a long, long, busy day. But
should be a good time.
My thing is, yeah, it will. It will be. First big NXT show. The last NXT show that I win is when it was in Atlanta.
Okay, nice.
When they had those shows in Atlanta. So those were the last NXT shows that I went to. No. I'm tripping. I went to the one in Charlotte. My bad. I'm tripping. Unforgettable. But to speak on some things, I talk about one of the matches first before I get on the overall NXT. Tonight, seeing Johnny Gargano come out there, I know they're trying to put some bill on Johnny Gargano, especially after he took the loss to Dominic Mysterio on Monday, which they kind of explained and gave him an excuse for that, being that he was attacked by Grayson Waller, who they had a Grayson Waller semi-Grayson Waller wannabe Big Body Hobby coming out there putting on his little touch and having him beat on that to add to the stipulation because I think they're trying to get some type of sizzle to this NXT, especially with all the multi-man matches that they have on this pay-per-view. What did you guys think about that, and how did you guys like that?
So, like, how do we like the Gargano segment and Big Body Javi?
Yeah.
So
and the stipulation that they were trying to add.
Yeah. The unsanctioned match. So this is this actually kind of also touches on an email that we got from Kevin. So I'm going to read that real quick. Kevin Catani says, salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. Looks like Stan Deliver's shaping up nicely. I think the men's tag team three-way is the most exciting news right now. Which match are you most looking forward to? And perhaps most importantly, what do you think the NXT landscape will look like post-Mania? Thanks as always. Go VIP and listen to 8YB. Office hours are now over. Kevin Catani. So the reason I say that this kind of ties into this email ties into what we're about to talk about is because this, I think, might be the match I'm looking forward to the most. Now, that's probably because I am just like a complete unabashed like Johnny Gargano fan. So I'm just wicked pumped to see him back in NXT and in a match and part of Stand and Deliver. So there's that. But I also feel like Gargano is going to go out there and try to give everything he can to get Waller over. I feel like that's part of the reason he's back in NXT. You know, it's probably also to give him something to do WrestleMania weekend. But part of the reason he's back is obviously you need to help put over younger talent. That's part of the reasons that, you know, the main roster talent comes down there. So I feel like the two of them are going to go and try to put on the best match they possibly can. Now, an unsanctioned match can go, I mean, it can really go either way. Like, they can, you know, do a lot of kind of crazy stuff to go all throughout the performance center. And, you know, it could come out great, or it could be kind of dumb and campy. So I feel like it really all depends on how they do this. But I have faith in Gargano to like make sure things go well, both behind the scenes and then in front of the camera. As well as like, you know, Triple H, Shawn Michaels still kind of like, well, more Shawn Michaels than Triple H. I don't know why I said Triple H. I guess I'm just used to saying Triple H down in NXT. But also faith in them to kind of, you know, book the match in a way that's going to elevate everybody. I think I would rather see them in a straight up one-on-one match, or maybe some other type of stipulation that keeps it in the arena, in the ring, because a lot of time these unsanctioned matches, you know, they'll go all over the place, and it's, I don't know, I almost feel like it's unfair for the live audience, because all of a sudden, like, you know, now you're behind the scenes, you know, there's like this 10-minute match that's out in the parking lot, and you're sitting there in the crowd, right? So that's kind of like, I think I would have rather see something that kept it in the arena, but that's not to say this won't. I mean, just because it's an unsanctioned match and they could go wherever they want doesn't mean they will. I'm pretty like hopeful that this is going to be, I mean, if not, I think it has a strong, it is a strong chance of being match of the night for me. But we'll obviously see what happens. Bruce, Gargano and, the other guy. Wow.
Waller.
Thank you. Jesus. Wow. That just escaped my brain.
So all your points considered, I understand why you say that. However, Johnny Gargano is the epitome of Shawn Michaels' philosophy of professional wrestling, which means you're going to have at least a 45-minute melodramatic match. Because of that, I don't think it's going to be a match tonight. I was really hoping he wasn't going to say unsanctioned match. But that's what we have here. I was actually hoping for a 2 out of 3 falls match because I think with what happened last week, just beating someone once isn't enough. I get the unsanctioned match part of it. You could do a lot more there. But I just feel like it's expected with Johnny Gargano. I also understand the booking reason. If it's not official, Johnny Gargano doesn't suffer the effect of a loss from Grayson Waller. But everyone knows that Grayson Waller wins. So Grayson Waller gets a big rub out of it. Okay, cool. Considering that I thought Grayson Waller should have won the men's NXT championship at... was it Vengeance Day? What's the one before that? New Year's Evil? One of the two?
I think it was New Year's Evil, yeah.
Where they've gone with him since, I think, has been a great pivot for him. Now, I still think it would have been better off to have him as champion, but we have what we have now. And I do think that what I said about the match earlier aside, there will be fine moments in the match, and Waller's going to get a chance to shine, not just because he's in there with a wrestling savant like Johnny Gargano, but Gargano is someone who's willing to take these bumps really well for Waller. Makes him look really good in that aspect. Considering it's unsanctioned, who knows what Waller's going to pull out. This is a guy who beats off of War Games like it was nothing. He's someone who looks for these moments all the time in a different way than Sammy Guevara, because Sammy Guevara kind of does it and really, without any sort of coherent psychology to the match or any attempt to really win the match. So Waller really does his stuff for impact and to try it and win the match. So I'll say that. I think it's pretty obvious that you have to have Waller go over here. I don't think you'll play it any other way.
Yeah, I agree.
I think we might see another Candice LeRae appearance during the match. But in the end, it's not going to matter. So, yeah, I do like what they've done with Waller, I will say. And I think it's really helped Waller show just how much he's grown as a character, how much he's grown in confidence in a short time, and that he's exactly what I said he's going to be since the very beginning. And he is going to make a lot of money once he hits Raw and SmackDown. You just can't look at what he's doing right now and hate on him for anything other than the fact that you're going to hate on him. He's just doing everything really well right now, and he keeps improving in the ring. It's not just the mic work, not just the character work. So kudos to him. Kudos to Johnny for being just so furious. I loved the troll work for Big Body Javi. It was awesome.
I didn't touch on that. That was
a nice little callback for him to when I already lost it, but when I think Gargano made his return and kind of evolved Javi, and, you know, calling like, he took my spot coming back. Who does he think he is? You know, I just thought it was great. Bumps well. I was kind of confused. Like, why would you come back into the ring after getting the ass whooped? But okay. He played his role well. And, you know, does Johnny Gargano have his own Christmas album? No. I'm better than him. So I thought all the stuff he was saying, just, it's perfect Big Body Javi.
Between the two of us, we're an NXT Triple Crown champion.
Exactly. You know, I mean, he understands his character. He's the finest, only a step below the finest, because the finest is the finest.
All right, Jarrell, back to you.
Okay. Now, my next question is going to start getting into the overall of NXT as a whole. As a fan of NXT for the past year, I've hated the booking of NXT. And I don't mean I hate the booking of NXT as, like, I'm just a hater of it. I hate it as in being someone who love NXT, but as a critique-wise, I want to see it do well. Because for a long period of time, from, I think, 2012 to almost to the pandemic, it was, like, the best show out there.
About 2014, I'd say, but I get your point.
2014 when it got in the highlights, but you know, when it came down to like matches, rivalries, feuds, characters that continued on when they went to the main roster and kept the same characters that they were and just had to make it themselves as they got to the main roster, because we know how the main roster is. They're not going to accept you being a character of something and things like that. That's what I mean by it. But right now, I hate the booking. The rehashing of old book things that was once-in-a-lifetime type of bookings and had meaningful characters in it and things like that, with like the rehashing of the Rockers thing, the Shawn Michaels, I fainted in the ring because I got beat up by Marines. And if you was a smart fan at the time, you knew what happened to him and stuff like that, and all the different type of stuff that they rehashed all the way to now. To now where over half the card is a multi-man match. Nothing stands out. Nothing.
But WrestleMania card, every WrestleMania weekend card is like that.
What I mean by this is, before when we had the takeovers, it was things that stood out that draw your attention, that made you want to follow a person, that made you want to look into our people. Back when we had matches, and I ain't even gonna say, I say a match like this. When I had Revival versus the Bald Villain, and because of the story that they told with the two teams with the Bald Villains reinventing themselves when they came out there, I forgot what old girl name, and they were trying to do something different, and they were catching on with that, and the matches came together. And those matches was the first matches that put us on about the Revival, because I remember when the Revival first came around, people were questioning about them and like, who are these guys coming out here talking about just fists, no flips, when they came out there in the tag team classic, and they were doing their thing in there, and people were like, who are these guys? are they trying to be the Briscoes or NXT and stuff like that? But after that match that they had with them and they beat the Bard Villains, that was something to look forward to. And my whole critique or hate on it is now that is we're trying to, I think NXT today is trying to put more into trying to find something and trying to, instead of just being themselves and coming up with stuff themselves, they're trying to throw so many different things at the wall and hoping that something stick, instead of just building things that interest people and allow whatever comes out of that to whatever you to build something that's unique to yourself and not copying and not stuff like that, because AEW do the same thing. They try a lot of different things that was in the past and stuff like that and try the hope that it sticks and go from there, when more likely, especially when you go to the main roster, most people not going to want to see daddy's girl talking and stuff like that when you have to give a promo to somebody, to a bunch of fans that's going to be like, they're going to watch you. It's going to come at you. They're going to want you to entertain them. They don't care about that the semi-character that you're trying to be, some old person character that want to see this young girl be a daddy's girl, man, talking about daddy.
She's not a daddy's girl no
stuff
more.
Like
let's move on to a different example, Jarrell. She's not a daddy's girl no more.
But that's a gist of the character.
No, it's not anymore.
But, you know, it just, when you, if you talk to people who not watching NXT and stuff like that and you try to introduce them to the characters, it's nothing that would connect with other people that you could find that would stick. And that's my whole beef with it and with how they're building this card today, because the only stories that they're telling is the main story, which should be the most important, but it's not. I just miss the NXT of it all, because to me, it don't always have to be about the matches. It don't always have to be about what you say. But I would love a blend of both, because me, I was a fan of Enzo Amore. We knew he wasn't good in the ring, but he could talk on the mic. And he was such a beautiful disaster in the ring where you didn't know how things would go with him. So it was intriguing. You wanted to watch him. You wanted to see what was going to happen. And you was entertained by him because one portion of what you needed to be, which was somebody on the mic, it was something like that. And I feel like they don't give these guys a chance to be that way. And that's my whole thing and my question. Do y'all feel like they're giving these guys a chance to show who they can really be, especially knowing when you have to go to the main roster, people ain't going to put up with certain different things. What you might like in a person, that's something that the main roster might not do, especially when you have to get on the mic and they coming at you like how they came at Rhea Ripley last night. And they want to watch you the whole time. And that type of stuff can harm the feud that you're trying to build up because you're not used to it. And like how she said, you know, that broke her confidence when she first came to the main roster and she lost confidence in herself and now she's getting it back.
So, okay, I think what she's trying to ask is like if they're properly preparing people to go to the main roster.
Yeah.
So, okay. So basically, like, let's try and summarize all of this here. But basically, like, back in the day, back in the glory days of NXT, if you will, the black and gold glory days, you know, it was a much different vibe. The concept of what NXT was wound up evolving. It went from being a developmental territory to being a third brand. And the booking there was very different than what we're seeing now because of it. Now we're kind of back to being a developmental brand. It's again starting to evolve. We're out of the NXT 2.0 era, you know, and things like that. But it's still a developmental brand. Now, one of the questions I remember being asked at the end of Black and Gold when 2.0 came out was the Black and Gold era a failure or a success? And I remember saying, I think it was a success. It was great, blah, blah, blah. It was awesome. You know, some great matches, great history, great memories and all of that. And I think Tom and Kelly agreed with me at the time. I don't honestly remember, but then I remember I was on Wrestling Night in America with Greg Parks, and Greg said to me, he's like, it was a success in terms of, you know, the fans, but as far as like an internal brand, it was a failure because they were not properly preparing wrestlers to go to the main roster. You know, you saw people come, you know, how many times did we see people go from NXT up to the main roster under Vince and just get completely underutilized? Karrion Kross, I mean, perfect example right there, right? So now being developmental again, they're trying to establish these people to have what they need once they do get to the main roster. And I mean, they were still trying to do that in NXT, but there was that disconnect between Vince and Triple H. Now, with where it's Shawn and Triple H, there's more cohesiveness there, period, with creative, because the two of them have a very similar creative mind. But also, it's Shawn is preparing them for Triple H rather than Triple H just trying to prepare him, mold him for what he wanted in NXT, and then just throw him up to the main roster, where Vince had no idea what the hell to do with them. So I think, yes, in terms of our, if that's the question, if, you know, they're properly preparing people, I think they are. You know, are they doing a perfect job? Probably not. But I think in terms of what the company wants, maybe not necessarily fan perception, but what the company wants, I think they are definitely doing the wrestlers a great service by booking things the way that they have been, and kind of trying to make sure that they have the tools that they need to get to the main roster. Does that all make sense?
Yeah. One thing we have to say, though, what a lot of people don't like saying or don't want to say, it wasn't a failure to the NXT because they got over, and those arenas that they put on in those takeovers were full when you go back and look at the numbers. Some of those arenas that they were filling out was not filling out.
That wasn't the point. The point was, even though that it was a financial success, it was a failure in the fact that they were not able to produce talent that Vince knew how to handle. So the entire
I'm going to say this. What I mean by that is also that what people don't like to say is that Vince was a horrible booker. Vince is probably the greatest promoter of all time. It's a different job than booking. But he was probably the worst booker of all time. And when he got his hands where characters were more of his liking, from 1990 to they got to the Attitude Era, was a touch of Vince McMahon booking. Horrible. You got those job characters where everybody had like a job, a profession, and stuff like that. To after the Attitude Era, the Aggression Era and stuff like that, when he started putting his likes and tweets all the way to now, he was one of the worst bookers of all time. He because it was to entertain him, not what captivated people. And most of the people that you seen got over, they had to find those characters themselves and make him believe in it. And then he was able to promote those characters to be bigger than life. Stone Colds, the John Cena's, the Rocks, who you put them out there, you name them. They made those characters. He didn't make them. They made those characters, and he just promoted them and made them bigger. That's why he's the greatest promoter of all time. So the failure was more on him, but a lot of people don't like to say that because, I don't know, I guess it's a protection event and not a heavy criticism of Vince. The only criticism Vince gets is what he do outside of the business, which he should get a lot of criticism for.
No, fair enough. I definitely hear what you're saying. But no, definitely appreciate the debate, because it was, you know, kind of interesting conversation. But I am gonna cut you loose here, because we do have somebody else in the queue. I want to make sure they get time to get what they need in.
Oh yeah, that's it for me. I appreciate talking to you guys, man. And
all right,
when I go to the show, man, I send y'all an email in, man.
Sounds good, man. We'll look forward to it. Enjoy the show. If we don't talk to you before then.
Yes, sir.
All right. Cool. All right. Thanks very much, Darrell. So let us go to our next caller here. It looks like it is a Skype or international call, because I just see a whole bunch of ones on the switchboard here. So if you just heard unmuted. Oh, hey,
hi.
You're there. Hi.
This is Reverend Keith. How you doing?
Hey. All right. How you doing? You don't come from a 111-1111 number?
Yeah, that's odd. Yeah, but I'm here. I know you guys was having problems with the switchboard earlier when I called. It went from the music to then the call dropped or something happened earlier. But I'm glad. Were you having switchboard problems earlier?
I'll say switchboard problems, but it was really mostly just Nate being a moron problems.
Oh, man. Oh. Okay, well, it's good to hear your voice, Nate. You've been missed the past couple of weeks, man. And that was a good
it's
debate
good
you guys just had with Darrell. He always brings out the best in you guys. And, that was a topic for another discussion, I think.
Yeah, I think we were kind of getting a little off topic, but a different show that would have been great, yeah, for sure.
But cutting to the point, I want to discuss the NXT Women's Championship. I noticed that about maybe 20 to 30 minutes prior to NXT going on the air, that Roxanne Perez had tweeted out, thank you for support, thank you for your prayers, and that the doctors still haven't cleared her. Now, I think that all of this is a huge angle which will lead up to Roxanne coming back the night of Stand and Deliver and reclaiming or winning the match, because I don't think they've officially stripped her of the title. But the thing of it is, this is to build persistence, perseverance, and a stronger pedigree in Roxanne, because I think that a lot of her opponents take her for granted because of her size, because she's real nice, because she's so young. And I think they're trying to build a stronger character in Roxanne Perez. So I see it going in this direction. I wanted to get your and Doc Bruce's thoughts on this.
Yeah, sure. So we touched on this a little bit. I think it was the last time I was on the show, so at least a couple weeks ago. Bruce, I'm going to actually throw to you on this, because I think you'll be a little bit more eloquent than I can be with this.
So when it comes to this women's championship scenario, I've been saying since it happened that at the end of the ladder match, Roxanne Perez is going to make her appearance. Now, I think that's much more likely if it's the main event, but considering the main event is probably going to be Breaker versus Hayes, they might save her appearance until Tuesday night when whoever is holding that title, at this point might be the Tiffany Stratton, comes out and is holding it up, and she comes out and they have their little Cena Rock Michaels HBK moment, or Cena Punk and Michaels HBK moment, and then lead to some kind of unification bout either on TV or later. It seems a little weird not to have an outstanding deliver. Unless next week Roxanne Perez is a fourth entrant into that last chance qualifying match, which would seem a bit rushed considering it was only 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, and it seems and how they've been describing the situation, it really makes it seem like doing that would be not as believable as if they waited until at least Stand and Deliver. It's only a few more days, but still gives it about a month. So, to me, that is kind of the direction that I think they're going. I think the most likely scenario is ladder match, end of the ladder match, then Tuesday, and then the least likely scenario, but one that I wouldn't discount, is Perez being the fourth surprise entrant in what currently is a triple threat last chance qualifying match with three of the four losers. You can't have the fourth loser because she's half of the women's tag team champion and is already scheduled for a match that night. So I guess that could be a way to move Perez if they're considering she never lost the title. And it would be within Perez's character to say that she wants to fight her way into the match rather than to be given the match. But again, I do think that the most likely scenario is that they want that shot. I really believe they want that shot of the two titles being held up across from each other. I'm assuming it's going to be a heel next to Perez, which is why I think it's going to be Tiffany Stratton as opposed to Zoe Stark, because Zoe Stark still has a Soluka going on, which I'm assuming is still going to come to a head. So that's where I see it going.
Yeah, it's I'm still kind of torn. I don't know how the heck they're going to pull this off, because this whole angle seemed a little weird for me. And from what I understand, from what I've been reading over the week, I mean, this was or the past couple weeks rather, this was a different injury. So they needed to write her off TV so she could take care of that. But they didn't quite quite elaborate on it. I think it wasn't an injury or some sort of a situation or something like that. And that's why they wind up. What was that?
It was a health situation, as was reported by Meltzer and Alvarez. It was apparently some sort of health situation, and that's why they wrote out with this angle in the event that she could not come back prior to Stand and Deliver.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Cause, yeah, it seemed really strange, like, for all of a sudden her to just, you know, be written off TV like that as the champion and, you know, during a relatively strong reign. So I'm kind of torn because I feel like, you know, what Bruce has laid out with her, well, and both of you kind of laid out with, you know, and them getting that shot of her holding up, you know, both women's titles, you know, the interim title and then, and her title, like that I could see being in video packages for years for NXT, you know? So like that makes a lot of sense, but at the same time, you know, as Bruce said, it feels very, very rushed, you know, and maybe it's rushed just because of real life situations, you know, now she's cleared where she wasn't before, but, you know, it's, I'm really curious to see how this winds up playing out. I tend to lean with Bruce, like that's probably the most likely scenario, but, you know, at the same time, I keep thinking to myself, it just seems too soon, seems way too soon. But I also hate to, you know, for Perez not to get some sort of a payday because she wasn't able to be on Stand and Deliver, just because of a storyline. So there's that too. But yeah, well, Keith, back to you.
Okay, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out, but I could still see her making that appearance in the match itself. But we'll see. Either way, I think that she will either reclaim or, you know, unify, as Doc Bruce is saying, the titles either on Stand and Deliver or maybe the Tuesday afterwards. Either way, I think that the whole point of this storyline is to make her character much stronger and make her more resilient, you know. So we'll see. You know, because she really overcame a strong opponent in Mako Satomura, who took her to the very limits. I mean, those kicks were very stiff. They were very stiff kicks, and that brought out the best in Roxanne. So we shall see. And when she does reappear, it'll be shucky ducky quack quack.
Oh, please don't.
Oh, man.
I know. Yep. That's Booker T's girl. But anyway, now, what I want to allude to next is the Carmelo Hayes Braun Breaker title picture. Now, have you guys noticed the recent transformation of Carmelo Hayes? He's starting week by week more and more. Week by week, he's starting to become more of a baby face. And you could even see it tonight when, you know, in his interactions with Trick, his, you know, his hype man with Trick Williams. And also at the conclusion of the match with Pretty Deadly, when he just handed him the belt and he showed him that ultimate sign of respect. Now, we all know that Carmelo can be narcissistic, but at the same time, he's a man's man. You know, he has everything. He has it. And right now, it looks like the bookers are leaning towards turning him babyface. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, it's funny you said, because like I definitely do see what you're talking about. He did seem to have, especially tonight, he did seem to have a little bit of a different demeanor. I mean, he still had that cockiness and that swagger to him, but you know, like when Trick Williams, you know, announced Braun Breaker, for example, you know, that confused look on his face, you know, it almost for a split second there almost seemed like Trick and Mello almost weren't on the same page. So I definitely think that could be, you know, something in the cards for Mello. I almost would rather see him as a heel, cause I love what he's doing, but obviously, yeah, I think, yeah, every good heel is eventually going to turn face. It could also be, you know, hopefully it is some foreshadowing as well for, you know, for a Carmelo title run here. So as I said, while we were having switchboard issues, you know, the Braun Breaker title reign has been just so absolute lackluster. It's time for a change. And, for what Mello did for the North American title, I really want to see him do that for the NXT championship. And I think he can do it. So, I'm all for it. Bruce, over you.
It's not just been tonight. If you go back to the contract signing, that was, or even before the week before the contract signing, I should say, when they're kind of just talking each other up in the ring. That was all babyface stuff. There was not a single heel line in that moment. Last week, you had slightly heel stuff with the underhanded comments coming after all of the praise. But that was more to try and break the mind games and get the one-up in this whole who's best scenario. So it's been coming. And it isn't just that it's been those last few weeks. The crowd has never really ever received Carmelo Hayes as a heel, even when he has been a heel. He's just been too cool to be booed, basically, right? If you're only booing him, basically, because you're a hater, essentially. And so I think the eventual plan was always for him to go this route because the fans are already making that happen for him. It wasn't anything that I think had a definitive path, but it just became more and more clear as the weeks went on because of how he was being received every single week. I don't remember a time he came out and drew boos unless he was on the mic trying to draw boos. When he enters, when his music hits, he draws pop, and he's always drawn pop, so at least in NXT. So for me, when you look at NXT's history, whether you want to talk about Black and Gold with Darrell, that whole conversation that went off the rails, you want to go back further, NXT tends to do best when you have a babyface champion that people can get behind, whether it's someone like an Asuka or Shinsuke Nakamura, or you go back to Sami Zayn, unless you have a definable upper-tier heel like Kevin Owens. That's no one, I think, in NXT, at least in the men's division, is at that level. So what you need to have is then the person's going to beat Breaker also be booked as a strong babyface in a different kind of way than Brock Breaker. So I think they've successfully done that here, both in the short term and in the long term. And again, you just need to actually make the call and finally have Breaker drop the strap because it's been the most – you can put Raquel Rodriguez up there. I still think his reign has been the most lackluster title reign of the main two titles on NXT's history. So not the greatest endorsement for me.
Yeah.
I at least remember Raquel Rodriguez was champion when she was champion at the time Raquel Gonzalez.
Yeah, no, same. And I mean, like, you know, Bobby Roode, he's somebody else that, you know, people are like, I wasn't a strong champion, but at least I remember he was champion.
His character was great.
Yeah, and come on, glorious, especially back then. Oh, anyway, Keith, let's head back to you.
Okay, now I do agree with you, Doc Bruce, that Bron Breakker's title reign has been boring and inconsequential, because it's like, you know, we know who he is. He's a son of a Steiner, and he just, his character hasn't reached that star potential level yet, but yet, you know, based on his name, you would think that he would be at a much higher level at this point in his career than he is, especially being the champion. So now, granted, he went from the NFL or trying out for the NFL, because he tried out here in Baltimore for the Ravens. You would think that even though it's only been, what, 2.5 years now, I think he's been an active wrestler, but still to be the champ, it's a lot of character development that's needed in Bron Breakker. And I think he needs to work from traveling with the main roster guys that can work with him, help him reach the next level, whether it be your Johnny Gargano's, whether it be your Seth Rollins, guys that can force him to work and help him reach his star potential. So I think that whenever he does reach the main roster, they should give him a slow progression and allow him to work a lot of the house shows so that he can get the reps in to build his character so that he will look more confident standing in front of crowds of 10,000 to 20,000. You know, right now he's standing in front of the same people every week. You know, because if you look through the crowd, you see the same people in the audience every Tuesday night. So he needs to tour. He needs to get used to that crowd reaction, learn how to sell more. You know, it's not just clotheslines. It's not just, you know, shoulder tackles, body slams, power slams. You know, he needs to learn how to sell more. And like I said, if he worked with some of them guys on the main that can help put him over, I think he has what it takes in the years to come, but he's just not there yet. What are your thoughts on his overall progression?
Oh, yeah. I I pretty much agree with what you're saying. I think he has what it takes, but there's something missing. And, you know, one of the things that we've talked about quite a few times on the show is I want to see him turn heel. I think that he would put he would make an absolutely fantastic heel. You know, his promo style right now, you know, just that the yelling. I mean, to be able to take that and then kind of mold that into that like, you know, heel style promo, I think would do wonders for his career, and it would actually make people, especially if you did it right, would make people take notice of him. There's something in his presentation that just doesn't click, and I don't know if it's not his in-ring work or anything like that, or really even his charisma, because I feel like the charisma is there. It's just the character itself just isn't sticking. And I think it's also because everybody knows that he's the golden child, right? Everybody knows he's the one that he's the chosen one, right? So it's really hard for me to, you know, actually get invested in any Bron Breakker feud, because it's like, I know Bron Breakker's probably going to get a spear and win. So it kind of is hard for, I think that's one of the reasons for me anyway, it's hard to get into it. And I'm sure that's kind of the same for a lot of people too. But I think, like, you know, like you said, I think he does have it. He's got the look. He's not bad in the ring. He's certainly improved. He's certainly improved since his debut. But yeah, it's that connection with the audience. And once he's able to do that, once he's able to figure out what that is, I think he's going to have a halfway decent career. But he has to figure out how to make that connection first. Bruce.
Yeah, we can move on.
Okay.
Last but not least, I want to touch on Grayson Waller, and I agree with everything you guys said earlier tonight when I first was able to get back on through the switchboard. He has it. He has a lot of charisma. He definitely has the match skills, and I think that his match with Johnny Gargano has a chance to be the match of the night. But Grayson Waller is definitely main roster talent. He has main roster talent potential, and, you know, he's a good promo. I really like him. Another thing I want to touch on, last but not least, is Dragon Lee. It was so good to see him out there tonight. I think that he will show the entire WWE universe why he was so highly touted, why he's such an international star, and people are going to wonder why WWE didn't have their eyes on him years ago. I used to watch him wrestle for Ring of Honor, and the guy, he can put on bangers of matches night after night. And I mean, he electrifies the crowd, and he just has so much going for him. So I think once we all get an opportunity to see Dragon Lee and NXT wrestling on a regular basis, you're going to be amazed at the star potential this guy has. Thanks for taking my call, gentlemen. Hope to talk to you
real
soon.
Real quick, Reverend Keith.
Oh, okay. Yes, sir.
I made a tweet in response to Public Enemies earlier with Carlos Boozer and his hair. You might want to go check that out.
Carlos Boozer?
Remember the spray hair he had?
Yeah.
Go check that out.
Thanks.
I'm sure you'll get a nice laugh out of that one.
I certainly will. And I'm glad to be able to talk to you guys, man. You always do a good job, and keep up the good work, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right, man. Definitely good to hear from you. Always a pleasure, Keith. So we did talk quite a bit about Grayson Waller a little bit ago. We kind of quickly just touch on that, but basically everything that you just said about Grayson Waller, I think Bruce and I are pretty much in agreement with. He's going to be a major star in the company, one way or another. His progression from debut to now has just been phenomenal. As far as Dragon Lee goes, Bruce, I know we just had to talk a lot about Bron Breakker, and that was so painful. And I know you're just itching to talk about Dragon Lee. So go ahead.
As a fellow Lee, this was shaping up to be the best segment of the year, or best segment of my lifetime, until J.D. McDonagh made his entrance. So during the report was kind of confusing, because I was like,
well, Lee said this to Wesley,
yeah,
and Lee said this to Dragon Lee. But
yeah,
you know,
same for the
yeah,
hits and misses.
Yeah, and then we were going in one of my Slacks about different wrestlers named Lee, and I was, you know, the former Trevor Lee, Kimberly, Keith Lee, and then someone said Lee Johnson. Like, you ruined it. So, yeah, we were having a bit of fun with that. Dragon Lee is, as the good Reverend was saying, he is a fantastic wrestler. From what I gathered, his goal was always WWE, so AEW was kind of never really a factor in his decision to sign. Coming to NXT, I how to put this? I think he's a talent who could have made it straight to our SmackDown on his signing. There might have been discussion on, well, does he know WWE style enough, the promos? I think the fact that he came out last week in his debut and spoke in English and was doing that today too in a second language and showed no fear, no lack of confidence, I think that speaks well to how quickly he's going to progress. He might not be long for NXT, and I always say that a lot, but he's someone who already has all the skills needed to be, you know, one of the best luchadors the company has seen, and this is a company that employed Rey Mysterio for the most of his career. So I'm just ecstatic to see Dragon Lee. I think done just enough and giving him little bursts on TV for people to see and hear, and then him getting interrupted or having something else happen that to where you don't get much more of him. Because I think your real introduction to him needs to be in the ring if you haven't seen him before. And as much as we describe the pace, the speed of people like Wesley, of Nathan Frazer, the talent of them, having Dragon Lee face off against any of them is going to be a blur, essentially. And I really wanted just to have a singles match between Lee and Dragon Lee, or the both Lees, the Lees, I guess. But this is going to be a great way of getting people up. Going back to what Darrell was saying, yeah, this is WrestleMania season. They do as much as they can to get everybody on the card, you know, as many people on the card as possible. Having two nights always helped too. The fact of the matter is, when it comes to this weekend, there's always a many multi-person matches, whether it's the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, whether it's an Intercontinental Title Ladder match, so on and so forth. So I don't see any issues with that. I do quibble with some of the things you said. That's a different discussion again. So, and I kind of lost my train of thought going because of me making that tangent. Dragon Lee, right. So, if you haven't seen Dragon Lee, and you want your first experience with him to be in an NXT ring, don't go to YouTube, don't do anything. But if you want to prepare yourself, I would recommend going and looking at that, looking up his stuff, because, there is a chance if next Saturday is your first experience with him in the ring that you're going to be pretty breathless and kind of out of energy. So, yeah, it's going to be fun watching him. Real quick, him versus Wesley, him versus Axiom, him versus Nathan Frazer. Give me those three matches right away, and singles matches, man, and I'll take it.
Sounds good to me. I was actually just about to do some YouTube, and when you're like, don't, and I was like, all right, well, fine. I won't.
If you want your first.
No, I think I'm going to just leave it be and see what happens with his debut on Stand Deliver, because I am familiar with Dragon Lee. Like, I mean, I know who he is. I've heard about him and everything, but I've actually never, I don't think I've watched a match. So I'm actually very excited to see you see him in action. All right. With that said, we actually do have another caller in the queue here. So let's go over there and go over to area code 914. Go ahead. Let us know who you are and what you got for us.
Hey guys, it's Brad in Florida. How are you?
Hey Brad, how are we doing tonight?
Hey guys, good. The good Reverend Keith stole some of my kind of thought process and some of my thunder, where I did want to bring up the slow, subtle Carmelo babyface turn, but that has definitely been discussed while I was on hold. That was brought up. So my question is about, and look, maybe I'm missing something, but is this women's ladder match for an interim title, or is it, because every graphic I
they
can just see
said.
Is NXT Women's Champion.
They haven't
okay,
specifically
so,
said, because they're working under the assumption that Roxanne Perez could still return in time for the match, and if so, that there wouldn't be an interim, but if she's not there for the match, then they're probably, I don't think they would call it an interim, depending on if she appears. They might just say the new Women's Champion, and then kind of like when Cena won, and when Razor Ramon won, and then they have the champion that was injured, or in CM Punk's case, had left, come back and do that thing. So they haven't specifically stated. So you're not missing anything there.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you guys. Because yeah, I just think it's so weird. I was actually at the NXT where Roxanne had passed out, and it was obviously like a kayfabe injury, you know, and for her to still be out, like what it makes me think is that she's just going to be a final minute surprise entrant into the match, almost the way like Theory was a surprise entrant
yeah.
into the Money in the Bank match. And even if they have five people filled out, like what's the point? You could make it six, which most ladder matches like are six anyway. And you could just kind of go from there. I mean, I just can't see this being like a real thing and a real injury where she's just going to lose the title like that or just not have it. And I just was confused because when you guys were talking about the visual of Roxanne standing there with her belt and then another woman with another belt or Tiffany Stratton with the belt or whatever it is, it would be a cool imagery. But I just, you know, again, just didn't understand it because they haven't explained it at all.
Yeah. Well, part of it is there was an actual legitimate, and I think this might have been before you jumped on because I don't remember seeing your number in the caller queue. We were talking about this, but there was a legitimate like health scare that she had that could have potentially kept her out of action. She was well enough to be able to wrestle that match with Mako Satomura, but they needed to do the angle to kind of write her off TV to make sure she could be cleared. She has been cleared at this point, according to Meltzer anyway. I think what they're doing is kind of, you know, or what they did rather to set us up to this point was basically in case she wasn't able to come back. So now it's kind of, I think, you know, a matter of what are they going to do? Are they going to bring her back at Stand Deliver, which I think is probably the most logical, or are they going to wait and bring her back later? But yeah, because it did seem really weird to me too, when, and to Bruce, that, you know, all of a sudden she just passed out after this match. And it was, you know, it did seem really strange, but after kind of learning that there was a real life, like health crisis, they didn't go into detail, but yeah, it definitely made a little bit more sense at that point.
Geez, that is weird because actually her passing out mirrored. There was a moment in a Shawn Michaels match, and honestly, I forget which match it was.
94.
I think it was where he did the same exact thing. And, you know, it kind of echoes back to what happened with JC Jane and Gigi Dolan with the Rockers and, you know, kind of how they mirrored that segment. So you just kind of felt like, oh, maybe they're just mirroring another Shawn Michaels segment here. And then for
Do you know why that happened with Shawn Michaels in 94?
Yeah.
He got into a fight with the Marine at a bar and got his ass beat. And so he has the injuries that you write him out for. So a little different than Perez, but in the same sense, they have legit things that are bothering that. You might have missed it, but I said that if Perez is a surprise entrant, it's going to be next week when they have the last chance triple threat match for the last entrance. But I also said it seems too quick considering they've been acting like they have no idea that it might be a longer wait than next Tuesday. So we'll see about that. But yeah.
It is interesting that, you know, she might be an entrant into a match to get in for her own championship. Like, it seems logical what you're saying, but it seems also like kind of ridiculous that she should have to qualify for her own. She's already going up against the odds by having to go against five people, you know?
Sure. I forgot to mention that when I brought that up, I also said that her character is one where she would tell Shawn Michaels that because she hasn't been around and all these other people qualified, that she doesn't want to be given her spot in the match, and she wants to earn her spot. She has that kind of character. That's what happened with – that's kind of the whole Mako Satomura thing that happened with her too. So if it does happen, which I think is the least likely scenario, that's how it's going to happen.
Yeah. And on Reverend Keith's point about Bron Breakker not really connecting, when I went to NXT, I noticed the same thing. Like the crowd doesn't really like him that much. They were chanting, "Save us, Mello, save us, Mello." When he comes out, it almost sounds like boos. You get the woot, 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 whatever, but you got a few people doing that, but mainly that crowd does not like him. And surprisingly, they really don't love Roxanne that much either. And I don't know if that's because they feel like Roxanne was kind of a usurper of Mandy and them loving Mandy so much and all that. I don't know what it is, but just very weird how they really do not react positively to Roxanne at all. And they don't react positively to either of their champions, which is kind of funny. You know, they react crazy to Grayson. They react crazy to Carmelo. They love, Gigi Dolan and Toxic Attraction. It's just not connecting with them with Bron Breakker. And I saw that firsthand when I went there. It's just very weird. And I do think a lot of it is Bron Breakker with the yelling and the screaming and the sort of the loud mouth, and I like Bron Breakker, but sort of the tough guy act that he puts on, he's this tough, loud, angry, screaming type of guy, but he's also someone you got to love and think it works. And I do think like Keith said, he needs to work on his character a little bit more. And I do think also the theme song has something to do with it. Like, his theme song is one of those very generic Death Rebel rock, just nothing really to it. It's just a heavy guitar and some drums and whatever. Like, Mello has a really great theme song. It's just so cool when he comes out. When you think about it, the theme songs, guys, they mean so much. Like, it makes you
100%
see someone. Yeah, even Gargano, changing his theme song from the female singing Rebel Heart to this kind of remixed version of it, it is really bad.
I
don't understand why. I hate it. Like that song, Rebel Heart, was such a great song. And hearing him come out, even if, you're like, oh, he's kind of annoying at times and he's a little bit like a tattletale, his character, whatever he was being on Raw. Like, it was always really fun to see that, to hear that amazing song and him coming out. And now that they changed it, it's kind of like, eh. So I think theme song just has a lot to do with everyone and why they're liked. And I even know with my own kids, not to beat a dead drum here, but my own kids, they love when Carmelo comes out because they love, they're like, I'm the greatest, I'm the best here. They like rapping the song and everything. And, and with Bron Breakker, I think, he needs to do a lot of changes to his presentation, to his music, to his everything. And I just was surprised when the crowd just really does not like him there. I'm just really surprised by that.
Yeah. No, I mean, it definitely comes across on TV that, the crowd doesn't, pop for him like they do, they do others. We've talked a lot about Bron Breakker tonight, but
over the last year.
Yeah. And over the last year for that matter. But I, to your point about entrance music, I really couldn't agree more. I mean, and this is across the board in WWE. They're getting better in some cases. I feel Damage Control has some great music. Roman's got some great music. Sonya Deville's got some great music. And there's a few others out there too that are not holdovers from the CFO days. But for the most part, a lot of the music is just generic as hell. And it's I think back to, I grew up through the Attitude Era. So I think back and it's I remember, Val Venus's music. I remember, the Corporate Ministries music. It is all this stuff I remember because it was so different and it was unique to the character. Not just that, bring back Titantron videos. right now, anytime somebody comes out, you just, oh, it's just their name on the screen. No, show me a video package of them every time they come out. Like Mick Foley's video is iconic. Stone Cold's is iconic. The Rock's is iconic. And I mean, they've changed over the year. They changed over the course of their careers too. But like, you know, I can still see Stone Cold's video, like in different iterations of it in my head.
Or Bret Hart, the beginning
or
of
Bret
it.
Hart,
zooming
yeah.
in on him.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's all the little things like that that really I felt like helped to give the character depth, you know, and but now it's just everything's so generic and it's so much about the brand as opposed to being about the wrestlers. And even it was to a point back then too, but it is more so now. It's just all about WWE rather than being about individual stars, which I feel like is smart because you don't want to put all your eggs in one basket. But at the same time, I feel like they do need to do some tweaking with their presentation a little bit as far as I'm concerned. But what do I know? I'm just an armchair quarterback.
No, you're right, man. You're right. I mean, Death Rebel, if you think about what is Roman Reigns, I mean, look, that theme music is so epic when he comes out. It feels like the final battle in a video game that's coming out.
Yeah.
But you got guys like even Wesley, like very generic. Like it might as well be Roxanne Perez's theme. Like you could switch them around. It wouldn't even matter. Like there's no identifiable anything like, you know, like the glass breaking or for Stone Cold or anything. I mean, I could talk about theme music for hours, but I do think, you know, when the music is more fun and more recognizable, it is a huge part of the wrestler's presentation, like just gigantic. And I feel like it's missing from Bron Breakker. Even I'm watching NXT on replay. I just rewinded it. JD McDonagh's coming out right now on my TV and his theme song is just a generic guitar. It might as well be John, you know, it's Def Rebel. They really, I wish they could bring Jim Johnston back because I know he would love to do it. I've heard interviews with him. Guess it doesn't matter, but who knows what kind of contract they have with this Def Rebel that does their theme music, but it's just not good right now. At least it's not recognizable. And I think that is a big part to do with a lot of the presentation of a lot of these people and why maybe they're not coming across as well. And I guess my last point is, do you think that the loser of Carmelo and Braun will go to the main roster? Because I'm not sure Carmelo's going to win. I think Carmelo's going to win. But do you think the loser goes to the main roster after Mania?
I'm going to say yes, but at the same time, we say yes all the time and it never happens. But I feel like this is kind of this feels like it's kind of that point. Like, you know, Bron Breakker's reign really needs to come to an end. Carmelo Hayes feels like the one to do it. Nobody else really has. Grayson Waller maybe to a point, but even then, like, I mean, we were clamoring for Grayson Waller to win, but I think it was really just to end Bron Breakker's reign. But, you know, at this point, it's like he's just Bron Breakker is – like I said, his reign needs to end, and I feel like Melo's the one to take it over, and it's time for Breakker to go up. Which could be a good thing or a bad thing. I think, you know, one of the things that, you know, I said talking with Keith earlier was, you know, I really would like to see him go heel. And I think him turning heel shortly after like a main roster debut or something, because if he just, you know, debuts on the main roster as Bron Breakker and then stays Bron Breakker and in this incarnation, he's going to just wind up in the mid card and that's it. But if he comes in like he is now, and then all of a sudden makes an impact and turns heel and, you know, after attacking, I don't know, Cody Rhodes or something, you know, like that will make his career and, you know, kind of, he can launch it, you know, it just kind of roll from there. But without any sort of major presentation change, I'm a little bit concerned about it. But to answer the question, I do think either one of them, Bron Breakker or Melo, whichever one does take the L, I think both of them are more than ready to go up. Bruce.
And how about Grayson as well? I'd like to hear both of you comment on that. I mean, do you think he goes up after this? Because
I don't think he's I don't think he's necessarily going to go up. I think
he's ready,
100% ready to go up. Yeah. But I think he's probably got a little bit more to do down at NXT first. But Bruce, yeah, on the others, yeah.
I just want Breaker off my TV every week. That'll help. I honestly do think that he's better suited for Raw than he is for NXT. His kind of one-note character plays better on a three-hour TV show than it does as the top champion of the developmental brand, if that makes any sense. Carmelo Hayes, I'm going to shed tears when he does finally leave NXT because he's been the best part of NXT for basically the last year. They're ready in different ways. Hayes is the – okay, how do I put this? I think Waller is the most complete of the three, but I think Hayes has the highest ceiling, and he's not that far behind Waller in terms of the complete package right now. I think Hayes, I tweeted earlier, is the present and the future of WWE. I just think Waller, if you had to go right now, putting him on Raw or SmackDown, who you think would float easier, or instead of who would swim instead of sink easier? I think it would be Waller just because of his charisma, his confidence, his mic ability, which I will admit, his mic ability is definitely is better than Carmelo Hayes. So they're all ready. I think the reason why I say yes to those two and not to Waller is what they're doing with Waller, I think, is in a way meant to make him one of the quote-unquote pillars of this face of NXT, right? So you have Breaker, you have Hayes, at least on the men's side, and then you have someone like Grayson Waller. And you think back to that War Games match, Black and Gold versus 2.0, Tony D'Angelo and the other three have just shot up, right? They're the ones who have kind of been the anchors of the men's division NXT, for better or for worse, considered Braun Breaker. But they're the three, when you look at who they put out as the faces of 2.0 in that War Games match, it was them. And three of the four have really...
Bruce, did we lose you?
Oh, I think we lost him.
I think
you
we may
me,
have.
Right?
Okay.
Oh, there you go.
I heard Bruce for all of 2 seconds.
You could. That was
there
weird.
You go.
Where did I drop off at?
I don't actually remember. But it was maybe about like
you were talking
10 seconds
about
ago.
Waller, where he's at currently.
Yeah, just I mean, they're the three faces of the men's division in 2.0. That's what was built to us. When was that match? 20. Halloween Havoc. So, that's right. I think that's right.
Bruce.
No,
I don't know. I think you're having mic issues. Like, I don't know if it's, but like we're getting like every other word.
Yeah, but like my point on Waller, while Bruce gets that figured out really quick, and I don't want to monopolize anything, but Waller's about to be 33 years old. I mean, you know, at what point? You know, this. It's not like he's like 25, and it's just so weird to me. Like, and obviously Theory's been unbelievable. Like, Theory's been phenomenal on the main roster. Great, I would say. But like, he gets to come up when he's 22 or 23. Like, why leave Waller there for? What are we gonna leave him there until he's 35 years old? Like, he has nothing left to do. Like, I could see him, you know, with the Miz and promos and doing things and just being a jerk to people. Like, I could see the crowd instantly being like, wow, this guy's freaking awesome. Like, with his, again, he has good music, good entrance, great charisma, great everything, like a real, true, unique persona with the boxing stuff. And, you know, he was a former boxer and everything. Like, I just don't understand, like, when is his time? I mean, when he's 40, like, you know what I mean? Like, when he, like, L.A. Knight? Like,
well, one
that's
thing,
what I don't understand.
Not everyone's got to have their time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And two, Theory was wrestling for a lot longer, I think, than Waller was.
Waller
started
wrestling. He had the
boxing experience and everything. Yeah, Theory's been wrestling for a while, maybe around the same time, but
he had body, and he was at a higher level at the independence than Waller was before he came to NXT. And in wrestling, you got to think about age a little differently, because being 35, 40 in WWE and AEW, it doesn't mean that you're not going to have a run. I mean, even if you go back to WCW, DDP started when he was, what, 35, and he had a couple runs as world champion. He was one of the most memorable characters of WCW. Even if you look at places like AEW now, they're being anchored. So MJF, yes, but before that, Chris Jericho, Moxley, these are people all in their, you know, upper 30s and the 40s with Jericho and everything. Wrestling is different. Sure, he might not be able to do everything he does now in 5 or 10 years, but I don't think staying around NXT another year is going to do him any harm. I think, if anything, it's going to make him even more prepared when he does get there, as someone who has been the anchor of NXT for essentially 2 years. It almost sounds like the discussion people were having around Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa, like, why waste them on NXT for 6 years? Well, they were there for a specific reason, because they were associated with the show, the brand. When people thought about NXT, they thought about those two. When people think about 2.0, they think about Hayes and Waller. They don't think about other people. So I feel like if you're going to, as a developmental brand, you also need to have people there to make sure you don't, you know, just detract everything. So having him there as someone, especially if you're moving Breaker and or Hayes up, having him there, excuse me, ensures that, one, when you are bringing up other people, like, say, Hank Walker, if they get into a feud with him, you have the utmost confidence that that feud is going to go okay, that it's actually going to be fine, the promos are going to be okay, because you have Waller there. You can't just get rid of everybody and say, this is your time now, because if you do that, then no one's going to have their time, and then you leave nothing with NXT to keep as a developmental brand. It'll just be basically a low-A team instead of like a triple-A team, which is supposed to be. So while people want to have their time, and I understand that, you can't have that for everybody. And I think you have to look at the value that that person has to the brand, to the show, right now and into the future, versus, yes, he could go up there and he could definitely have his way on the mic with anybody. But with the bloodline going so strong, with Cody Rhodes there, with The Miz, who's sort of a slightly worse version of what Grayson Waller is right now, it might not be the best time for him to be up there doing his shit. So I think there are more things to consider here than Waller is 35. So, yeah.
Yeah. And last thing, what's up with Cora Jade? Do you guys know anything? Like, I don't know. Just, I see her in pictures with Bron Breakker in Vegas, and she seems fine, and, you know, I don't know. I mean...
Yeah, I mean,
creative got nothing for you. Creative got nothing for you.
Yeah, I think that's really it. It's a creative thing. I mean, we saw her. Oh, I feel like it was like 3 or 4 weeks ago, like in a backstage segment, and that was that. I feel like they're kind of cooling her off. Probably bring her back. Probably some sort of a like a Hutter fashion. I don't think she's like injured or anything like that. I think it's just kind of keeping her off TV for some reason.
I mean, yeah, we couldn't have gotten her in the ladder match. Like, she would have been fine. But, yeah, no, I hear you. Probably nothing that they're seeing
it's,
right for her.
Yeah, like I said, if I had to guess, because they're clearly high on Cora Jade. I mean, so if I had to guess, they're keeping her off of TV just to make her kind of have us forget about her for a little bit so they can bring her back in some impactful fashion. That would be
go into the ladder match. Remember who she was feuding with before she was kind of written off TV in terms of not being placed? It was Lyra Valkyria.
Yep. Yeah.
She's going to end up costing her the match at Stand and Deliver. They're going to go back to that feud afterwards. So let's just be patient here. I think that's the only way you bring her back, because she tried, remember, in the Battle Royal, she was eliminated by Valkyria and tried to eliminate her 3 times and finally got her on the 3rd try. So there's still that story with those two there. That's what's going to happen, I believe, I say, in the liver. Valkyria is going to be climbing the ladder, and all of a sudden, Jade's going to come over, tip the ladder over, and Valkyria's out of the match.
I wouldn't doubt that at all.
That's a very good, educated guess. Thank you, guys. Thanks for all the time.
Yeah, no problem, Brad. No problem. Good to hear from you, man.
You guys too. Thank you so much. Bye.
Yep, no problem. All right, cool. So with all of that said, we still have a lot we haven't covered yet tonight. I think what we're going to probably do is kind of touch on a few things, but we're probably not going to touch on everything because 6 o'clock in the morning comes very early and it's already midnight. We just were talking a little bit about Lyra Valkyria. So let's talk about Ivy Nile versus Lyra Valkyria. So we saw the two of them tonight in a qualifier match for the ladder match we were just talking about at Stand and Deliver. Lyra Valkyria obviously got the win here in a relatively short order. I think it was only, Bruce, you'd know better, but I think it was probably about like 5 minutes if I had to guess.
It was four something, yeah.
Yeah, so pretty quick, and I think it was a relatively decisive win for her. That said, I do need to point out Ivy Nile's performance here. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like Ivy Nile is just getting better and better and better each time I see her in the ring. She didn't get the win here tonight, but I think this, even though this is like a 4 minute match, I think this might have been the best that I've seen her in the ring. She looked like she belonged in there. I didn't see nothing stood out to me that looked like super sloppy. She just looked like a badass in there. I don't know if you agree with me or not, but that is at least.
I thought I was going to agree with you until you started elaborating. Maybe because I'm looking at it through the lens of my report, but when I saw Ivy Nile tonight, I just saw a lot of hesitancy, a lot of uncertainty in her moves. You could see her looking at Valkyria for the next thing, and it just seems like she's plateaued a bit, in my opinion. I think what fooled you a bit is the pace of the match. It was very fast, a very, very fast 4 minutes. They just went at it from the beginning and kept going. Valkyria, I think it was hard for her to look good with Nile's hesitancy. If you go back and watch the match, you can see the spots where Nile looked a bit uncertain and not confident in what in the next sequence. And so, to me, I think there's still a lot of potential in Nile's, for sure. Like, when she hits her running corner kick and she hits her Superman punch and she does her Dragon Slayer, I love all that. But I just don't see her having the confidence in the ring enough to really make me say, oh, okay, you know, I see that progression. I was going to say that too earlier. Going back to Bron Breakker real quick and the lack of connection. When Carmelo Hayes made the hot tag to Bron Breakker, the crowd didn't make a single sound. So just another thing in the column of Bron Breakker is boring as hell. Bron Breakker.
Yeah, right. No, that's definitely a good point. I've got the match back up now because I'm like, I thought it looked completely different, but whatever. I mean, I guess it's all subjective anyway. It's all subjective anyway. All right, cool. So we touched on that. We touched a little bit on Dragunov versus McDonough. Do we have anything else you want to talk about?
Let me just say, a way to make a fantastic match just deflate the crowd. And I understand why, so you can get them into the match with Wesley, but my goodness, have this match ended in a no contest right there for no reason other than the fact that you want to get them in the match, when this match was by far the hardest hitting, most technical, and best match of the night. Oh my gosh, I wrote in my report, if there's a deflation in the crowd for the rest of the second hour, you know why. It's because of the ending to this match. They maybe saved it a bit with Wesley furiously getting out there and hitting that the top row senton onto them, but my goodness, you wasted 12 and a half minutes or so of a fantastic match for bullshit BS ending. Sorry. It was just that made me angry. I shouldn't, but it made me angry because I just didn't see the point. I understood the point. It was unnecessary.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it sucks because I saw it coming. Like with Dragon Lee sitting there, it's like, you know, he figured something was going to happen. He was going to get involved somehow. But I really didn't think it was going to be like, he gets knocked into, and then he gets pissed off because he got knocked into, and he starts fighting both of them. You know, it's a little.
Just to give you an idea, if you haven't watched the match, listeners, not only was McDonough's chest extremely red, but Dragunov got hit with chops and slaps on the neck so hard, he had a deep purple bruise on the left side of his neck.
Yeah.
Like, they went at it tonight. And just to have that washed away with a stupid no contest, I'm sorry. It just, this is the worst of WWE booking.
No, I agree. I still gave the match a hit because the match itself was so entertaining that the finish, it didn't deflate me anyway. Probably because I assumed that was going to be the finish or something along those lines. Not necessarily exactly what happened, but I had a feeling it was going to be, you know, some sort of a DQ or something. Like you said, it's like the worst of WWE booking. It was so unnecessary. Dragon Lee, I really wanted to see something better for him to kind of get into a match here, because he kind of just, it almost seemed like, I guess stage. I mean, obviously it is stage, but just the fact that he accidentally gets hit. And then just starts pummeling both of them. But he clearly saw it was an accident because he was watching it. And yeah, it was like, yeah, I don't know. It was really, really, I feel like they're definitely dumb booking. But the match itself, though, up until that point, was absolutely phenomenal. Like easily match of the night, hands down. All right. So we talked a little bit about the great debate. We talked a lot about Breaker and Mello tonight. We didn't talk about Hartwell and Stratton, did we?
No, but I will say, I'll just leave it at this. Hartwell, I doubt, will advance beyond where she's at right now.
Yeah.
And Stratton hit the most majestic, impressive moonsault I think I've ever seen hit in a wrestling match. It was the amount of air she got and yet able to still land and rotate perfectly. Obviously, her gymnast background is coming into play there, but you can't escape into the BME. That thing was just so beautiful.
It was so graceful. It was so graceful.
Yeah, and so when we're talking about improvement, I think Tiffany Stratton, each time she's in the ring, she busts out something new. Like tonight, it was the leaping double stop to the sitting in DR. She hadn't done that before.
Yeah.
And you see each time the fluidity of her movements and of her tying things together. She understands her character and the ring philosophy. After she hit the BME, when she made the cover, she looked at the camera and was smiling and counting along with her fingers to the pin. Like, that's perfectly in line with her character. So she understands those little things that you need to do in order to advance. I'm kind of disappointed they haven't gone back to the Waller-Stratton pairing, because their characters are basically mirror copies of each other, and they work so well as those characters. Maybe it's just to handle, but you know, I think those two, when you're looking at 2.0, yes, the shift was bad. Yes, a lot of things have been very clunky. But when you look at success stories, look at Carmelo Hayes, you look at Grayson Waller, you look at Tiffany Stratton, you look at Roxanne Perez. I mean, you look at what they've been able to do. Look at Pretty Deadly, especially with Triple H being the head booker now. What they're doing, going back again to what Darrell was saying, they've always been developmental. Even when they were Black and Gold, they, at their heart, they were still a developmental company. Think about all the acts they were trying to, quote, develop on the show that weren't just indie talents. So I think a lot of that is also being lost in the discussion around NXT and 2.0, is they've always been developmental going back to FCW, right? So you look at what they're doing with their characters now, and who, not only who the booker of the main roster is, Raw and SmackDown, but look at who's booking NXT and the close, you know, the very real life close relationship they have with each other, and their philosophies in wrestling are so closely symmetrical and so mirrored to each other that what they're doing now, they're not going to have a sudden shift of character on the roster, just like Vince McMahon suddenly would have Gargano and Ciampa teaming against Aleister Black and Ricochet just because they were on NXT, even though they were feuding the show, you know, the week before. That's not going to happen anymore, right? So I think the shift was ill-timed, rolled out very badly, But in the long run, it has become – it was the right decision with the big caveat that that's only because Triple H took over because Vince was forced to retire.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I couldn't agree more. Matter of fact, I almost said that verbatim earlier tonight. But no, like, it's Tiffany Stratton. I am so impressed with her, like, just how far along she's come since her debut. I remember her debut. I was underwhelmed with it, and Tom and Kelly were like, if memory serves,
the three of us were all over.
Yeah, you guys were like all over it. I was like, eh. All right, you know, whatever. But I think it was either the next week or the next time she was out or whatever. I saw what you guys saw. It took me a little bit longer. But I mean, you could still see some places where she needed improvement. But every time she's out there, week after week after week, she just improves.
Real quick.
Yeah,
when she said her Tiffany Epiphany tonight, and
that was great.
Oh my gosh, I'm gonna climb the ladder and win. Like, no, duh, that's what you're supposed to do. But it's perfect because that's her character, right?
Yes.
So even her lines, she didn't have many tonight. She only had two or three. She made them count.
Yep. No, 100%. 100%. Cool. And with Hartwell, like you said, you don't know if she's probably kind of at her ceiling. I think you're probably right. She may wind up going to the main roster, especially where she had like a Royal Rumble, whatever. But I think she's probably going to wind up in that same spot. Maybe once in a while, maybe she's in a number one contender battle royal or something. But I think she's probably hit her ceiling and. Yeah, is what it is. I mean, not everybody can be the champ. You need people to be, mid-carders and then to elevate other people. So whatever. I think she's in a good spot. So.
And I think she's a better tag team wrestler than a singles wrestler.
I 100% agree with that. 100% agree with that. Cool. All right. So that was all the matches here. We only had four matches on the card tonight, which is very strange. We did have obviously that the great debate as well. We talked about a little bit earlier. So let's kind of blow through some of these segments here. So we talked about the opening of the show where Pretty Deadly came out. We also saw Gallus and the Creed brothers at a bar playing fake darts and kind of having some camaraderie and whatnot, which is a little strange. Then Tony D and Stax showed up outside and they all went back into the bar like friends, which was kind of weird. We saw a vignette for Lyra Valkyria, where she was like sprinting all over this like abandoned warehouse or something like that, which I don't know. At first I didn't think it was her. And then they showed a close up of her face and was like, okay, this is her. But it seemed like such a weird departure from her character and some of the other vignettes they had. It was still it was a cool vignette, but it just seemed strange.
This one was actually relatable compared to other ones.
Well, yeah. The other ones were very much like Viking type things, and this one was just like watching
parkour,
somebody run through the neighborhood. Parkour or something like that. So then we also we saw Gigi Dolin get interviewed about the ladder match at Stand and Deliver. That was also the segment you were just talking about with Tiffany Stratton coming out with her Tiffany Epiphany. Anything on those segments so far you want to bring up?
I noted in my report that Valkyria's original vignettes were just too mythical. There was nothing relatable there to latch onto, and I think that's part of the reason why her response has been a bit tepid. But something like tonight is a step in the right direction because the warehouse also had a gym in it. So it was one of those abandoned warehouses that gets turned into a gym. I saw a ring in the back, and she's doing some parkour and running through. I thought the jumping through the glass was kind of cheeky, but beyond that, this is much more relatable and gives us an idea of who she is. I mean, Seth Rollins' whole character, you see based around the fact that you see CrossFit after all. So CrossFit Jesus or whatever.
CrossFit
right?
Jesus, yep.
Yeah. So I think that's much more relatable, and it gives us an idea of why she's able to have so much momentum and explosivity on her offense. Gigi Dolin, yep. I think, did really well tonight in her
she
few lines.
Really well tonight.
She was calm, but also enraged at the same time. And then when she shifted her focus to the title match, she made that adjustment well and reacted as you would expect to Tiffany Stratton. So I think the Gigi Dolin babyface turn, aside from the match she has with Jesse Jane, has gone well. The pub segment, again, you just have wrestlers booking their own matches tonight, whether it's Wesley, again, well, he got the go-ahead from Shawn Michaels, but he made the battle royal for next week, right? You have the Creed going in and making the challenge, and then Gallus making a triple threat match on their own. You know, all these different things happening. The one thing we didn't talk about either is the Hank Walker vignette, which I think was actually done pretty well. I think Hank Walker came off very, very personable. You could see from his first that first match with Big Body Javi, when he took off his shirt, he slimmed down a lot since then. Again, you make it relatable. Former football player, old lineman at NC State. I think they even showed him on the Atlanta Falcons practice squad. You give things that people can latch onto, and they already want to like Hank Walker. So doing stuff like this, the stuff with Valkyria, there's one other vignette I'm thinking I missed that has something like this.
Eddie Thorpe one?
Yes, Eddie yep. Thorpe, former Carl Fredericks. Thank you for bringing that up. If you haven't seen Carl Fredericks before, I think his Young Lions class, which, 2018, he was in the same class as Clark Connors. That was a really good Young Lions class. Interesting, they kind of went with more of a Native American imagery here because he's from Australia and more Aboriginal, so I'm not sure how that might work, but maybe I'm not as learned on Aboriginal culture as well, so maybe some of the Dreamcatcher stuff is also part of his culture, but he's debuting next week. If you haven't seen him, get ready. He is fantastic. I just really hope he can bring some strong style into NXT and really work that because it's going to be fun. But my larger point was the vignettes they're doing. Once they get away from that mythical stuff and they just get back to what makes you you, they're doing a really great job of telling us who these people are and giving us reasons to either cheer or boo them.
No, definitely. Like, and that was something that I loved back, like when I first started doing PWT Talks NXT. You know, they were doing I can't think what the hell that they called the vignettes, but they were like those deep dive vignettes into the person, and they had a cool name, and I can't think of what the hell they were called, the vignettes. But basically, like, I remember one for Kushida off the top of my head, you know, that kind of talked about his family and, kind of just gave us a bit more of an idea of who they were. Now, I can't see them doing those style vignettes for everybody here, like, because, you know, we're kind of getting, I don't say we're getting back into gimmicks, but this, you know, a few more gimmicks here than there were back then. So I don't know if those style vignettes would necessarily work, but something like this, or, you know, with the Hank Walker vignette, or, you know, actually wrote all three vignettes tonight, give us a little bit to latch onto and understand who these people are. Cause obviously, yeah, the more we know about them, the more we're going to care and invest. So, all right, cool. So, we saw Indy Hartwell throw a temper tantrum backstage after her loss. And then, Zoe Stark came by and poked the bear, kind of making fun of her for her loss. All right, we talked about Big Body Javi as Gargano. We just talked about the Eddie Thorpe thing. Ivy Nile got interviewed before her match about Paxley walking out on her last week.
She called Paxley kind of weird or something like that. So.
Yeah, it was a little weird. Then we also saw after the Hank Walker vignette, we saw Dempsey and Gulak backstage making fun of Hank and the vignette. Alba Fire and Isla Dawn attacked Kiana. Oh, and actually I skipped over a segment because we saw the segment earlier in the night with Kiana James and Fallon Henley, where Henley was telling Kiana James to come clean about Sebastian and the cheating and stuff. Then later on in the night, we saw Alba Fire and Isla Dawn attack Henley and Kiana. Obviously those four will be facing each other at Stand and Deliver. Where Kiana and Henley are going to be defending their women's tag titles. But they got attacked backstage. And after the attack, Henley and Kiana James got up and they were like, all right, you know, Kiana James made the save, I should say. It was Henley that got attacked. Kiana James comes in and makes a save. And because she made the save, Henley agreed not to tell Brooks about the, about Sebastian, and Kiana said she'd do it. It needs to come from her. And then I think the last thing I have written down here is Wesley tried to leave the arena talking to the cameraman, not Mackenzie Mitchell, about about this upcoming Battle Royal when he passes Dijak, Jinder, and Davikato backstage, all of whom kind of stepped up to him and had some words about the North American title and the Battle Royal next week. So those are a lot of segments. Pick and choose what you want to talk about.
The Henley James thing, like, I wouldn't necessarily say the storyline's been great, but they've at least kept at it. It was interesting because in the back, Helen said she's gone to tell Johnson because she actually cares about him as opposed to James. But then when James said you can't tell him until after the match or whatever, she's like, okay, fine. It's just, and then I'm thinking, like, does Brooke Simpson not watch NXT? Oh. So, yeah. I don't know. There's a lot going on. Yes. Some of it is good. Some of it isn't as great. But they're at least sticking with it, and they're giving people time on TV to work on the promos, work on their in-ring skills, etc. Again, I still think they've lost a lot of the momentum that James had coming out of the Iron Survivor Challenge, being stuck in this storyline, this whole love angle thing. Yeah, and then I'm trying to remember what else. Oh, the backstage fight. Like, my favorite part of that was when Isla Dawn was being pushed away by the ref. She kind of just had that grin on her face and just like, you know, that instigator who just does it just to have fun, you know? And so I thought that was really good because that's what her character's really been, getting away again from that mystical stuff, which doesn't really work too much, at least in NXT. And so they're just two badasses who go out there and have their way with them, essentially. So I think a title change is coming because I think it has to culminate somehow between Henley, James, Briggs, Jensen. This whole thing has to just go somewhere. So,
I agree.
Beyond that, though, I think we touched on all the segments. I might have missed one, but I think we're okay with that.
Yeah, I think that's about it. So, with all of that said, I think that's going to bring us to the end of our show. Again, I'm Nate Lindberg, and you can follow me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I do the NXT hits and misses, which you can find on pwtorch.com when I get them up, which I usually try to do right after NXT goes off the air. Bruce, who are you?
I am Bruce Lee Hazel. You can find me on Twitter at B_253. And again, my report for tonight's show is up at both the free and VIP sides of the Torch.
All right, guys. And with that, I'm going to steal Kelly's line, and we'll see you in 7.